Okay, so Perek Yod Aleph Hilchot Avodah Zarah of the Rambam. The Rambam says, "En korthin berif la'avdei avodah zarah." That's at least what it should say. That's what it says in your book. זה כך כתוב בספר שלך. אבל בספר שלו, אם תעיין שנייה ותשווה, אתה תראה שזה... פה הצנזורה כבדה מאוד.
למה?
תראה, בואו תרצה להסתכל. בואו תעמוד שם לידו.
מה הסיבה שאתה...
קודם כל אנחנו נקרא, ואחר כך אתה תראה מה הסיבה. It will become apparent. אין קורתים ברית לעובדי עבודה זרה, כדי שנעשה עמהם שלום. ונניח אותם לעובדה שנאמר לא תכרות להם בריף אלא יחזרו מעבודתה או יהרגו. So first of all, what does it say? Can you pass me the book for a second? What does it say in the censored versions, which many people still have, unfortunately, very heavily censored? This edition that I'm looking at here, which is Hosaat Alumot, put out in Eretz Yisrael and Tashin Cafe, which is based on Tfus Venezia from the year Shin Lamed Dalet until Shin Lamed Wow. Here it says, En korethin berit la'ovde kochavim u'mazalot. Ze bimkom goyim. Ken, or ovde avoda zara yata, nachon? Avad ze otov. This girsa, even though it's not accurate, is good when you compare it to what you have here in the regular Tfus Vilna. What here? I want you to see. כדאי שתראה בעיניך. שלא תאמר שאני... שלא... חשש שאני ממציא דברים. So no one... Lest anyone think that I'm making these things up. This is the regular Tfus Vilna that everybody knows. אין קורתים ברית לשבעת עממים. כדאי שנשים להם מלחמה. או שאם להם שלום. אני אלך אותם לעבודה עבודה זרה. See? What do you, what do you mean?
It's like
mine, no? No, in your book it says, En korathim brith la'ovdei avodah zarah. In Tfus Vilna here you see it says, En korathim brith l'shiv amamin. What possible connection is there? So, we have to understand that there are all kinds of statements in these prakim, in these parts of the Rambam, there are all kinds of statements that are not at all to the liking of were not and are not still probably to the liking of the Christian church and the Christian world, Christendom as it's known. This one here, of course, this version that we're learning here.
אז
ככה. יש כלל אחד גדול שצריך לדעת אותו, וזה כתוב במפורש בדברי הרמב"ן בחידושיו למסכת מכות דף ט. הרמב"ן אומר שיש שלושה מונחים שבהם חז"ל כינו מי שאינו יהודי לפי המצבים השונים. יש ביטוי גוי או נוכרי, שזה היינו הך. נוכרי זה לשון המקרא, גוי זה לשון חז"ל. זה היינו מי שלא יהודים. גוי, הכוונה מן אחד מן הגויים, כן, מהעמים, כי גוי פירושו בעצם עם. בן נוח זה מי שידוע שמתנהג בהתאם לשבע מצוות בן נוח, אבל הוא לא בא בפני בית דין, הוא לא קיבל מעמד מיוחד וכולי, אבל ידוע שהוא כזה.
רגע, זה כל גוי או רק גוי שמקיים שבע?
לא, 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 בן נוח זה דווקא מישהו הוא בן נוח, הוא הולך לפי השבע מצוות של נוח. כן, הוא לא, סתם גוי או נוכרי, כמו שהרמב"ן מסביר, החזקה היא שהוא לא מקיים שבע מצוות בן נוח. וככה, זה גם המציאות עד היום, דרך אגב. עד היום זה אפשר לראות את זה בעיניים, גם במדינות הכי נחמדות, זה בוודאי נכון, שהרוב לא עומדים בתקן הזה. והשלישי זה... והשלישי זה גר תושב. גר תושב זה יהודי, זה גוי, שמקיים שבע מצוות בני נוח, אבל הוא בא בפני בית דין של ישראל, בארץ ישראל, וקיבלו אותו בתור גר תושב. כלומר, זה כמו מין סוג של גיור. זה סוג של גיור. הוא קיבל על עצמו לקיים שתי מצוות בני נוח, ובית הדין קיבל אותו, ואז יש לו אישור מצד בית הדין, מצד השלטונות של המדינה היהודית, במצב תקין, במצב נורמלי. כלומר, אז משרד הפנים במרכאות היה מאפשר לו להיות פה, כי אז הוא, זה גוי תקין, גוי שעומד בתקן. Okay, now I have to say that in English. The Ramban, with the Nun, Rabbeinu Moshe ben Nachman, writes in his Hidushim to Masechet Makot Taf Tef that Chazal use three terms when referring to a non-Jew. One is Goy or Nochri. The word Nochri is the term we find in the Torah. That's Lashon HaMikra, the language of the Torah. The language more usually employed by Chazal is Goy, but it means exactly the same thing. And the Ramban explains that this term refers to a non-Jew whom we do not know. We don't know anything about him, we just know he's a non-Jew. And the assumption is that a non-Jew off the street, by all means, a non-Jew off the street is, one assumes he does not keep Shel Mitzvot Menach. Well, he doesn't, he may keep one or two, or may keep none, but he's considered, there's a Yesh Chazakah. We assume that he does not keep all the Shel Mitzvot Menach. The second term is Ben Noach. Ben Noach is a person, a non-Jew, whom we know does keep the Shel Mitzvot Ben Noach. We happen to know this person, and we know that he doesn't worship any kind of foreign false worship, and he does not he doesn't steal, he's a moral person, and all, etc. Regarding all areas of the Shel Mitzvot Ben Noach, he is careful and consistent in following these laws. He's called a Ben Noach. That's a different status. But he hasn't been officially certified by Beth Din as being such a person. And that is the third category. That is a Ger Toshav. A Ger Toshav, which literally means a foreign resident, is a non-Jew who is a Ben Noach, and he comes before a Beth Din. And they test him, they check him out, etc. And if they choose to, they accept him as a Ger Toshav, and they give him a special status. They would probably give him a certificate of some kind, or a document to say that he is a Ger Toshav, that he's known to be a person who keeps the Shel Mitzvot Ben Noach, and he's, with this status, he is now able to live in Eretz Yisrael. He has permission to reside in Eretz Yisrael. Those are the three terms. In other words, any other term that you see anywhere at all in halachic literature, in the Talmud, in the Rambam, or wherever it may be, when a term other than these three terms is employed, that term, you need to know, that term is an invention of the Christian senses. The Christian senses very deliberately, very systematically, over a period of a few generations, completely censored all our basic texts. This is very easily demonstrated. I'm not going to pull out all the books off the shelf now and prove it to you, but it's very easily demonstrated. You have here, for example, on the top shelf, I have here a Talmud Bavli, as it was printed in Venice in 1520. So there, for example, when it refers to a non-Jew, the word Goy appears. It was not censored yet. They hadn't yet got around to censoring that word. So the word Goy appears throughout. In later editions, the word Goy was always replaced with the word Akum. Akum is the term that you have here in this version here of the Kochavim Mazalov, the Akum. But this is a term that was not used by Chazal, unheard of by Chazal, and it's a very imprecise term which is deliberately meant to confuse, because the word Akum means again Oved Kochavim Mazalov, the person who worships stars or planets or something like this. And of course there are such people who, even today probably there are, certainly there were in ancient times, people who worship these different things. And as the Rambam discusses in an earlier chapter in Hilchot Avodah Zarah, this was actually the beginning of Avodah Zarah. This is the foundation of Avodah Zarah, worshipping heavenly bodies, such as the stars, the moon, the sun, etc. But it is entirely incorrect to say that it's only people who literally worship, who pray to, or worship in some manner some heavenly body, some star or planet or what have you, are considered to be worshipping Avodah Zarah. That's not true. Avodah Zarah can be all manner of religions and philosophies which contradict the Torah. In other words, the Torah obligates all people, Jew and non-Jew. A non-Jew is Hayav B'Sheva Misvot, and a Jew is Hayav B'Talyag Misvot. But the Torah obligates all Jews. Alright, so the original term, this text of the Rambam that I'm using here, which is also what you have in front of you there, this is an accurate text of the Rambam. So, Mimela, it employs a different terminology from the one that you see here. Alright? In this Tfus Vilna, as I just showed you, the censorship went even further. In the Tfus Vilna, as I just showed you, they really went out of their way to do a good job of censorship here, and they switched of the Avodah Zarah for the term Shiva Amim, the seven nations, which refers to the seven nations that inhabited Eretz Kana'an, Eretz Yisrael, at the time of Yoshua and David the Melech, etc., which of course are irrelevant to our discussion. And when the Rambam does discuss these nations, they're discussed not here, but in Hilchot Melachim. So it's clear that it's a very extreme example of censorship. And again, one doesn't have to look very far to prove this. One just has to look at manuscripts, but even the original printings like this one. Did you find it, Aaron? Very well. So, we continue. En kodothim brith la'avodah avodah zarah, which means, we are not permitted to make an agreement, come to some kind of an arrangement with non-Jews who are of the avodah zarah, in order to make some kind of a peace treaty with them, the meaning of such a treaty would be that we allow them to live here in Eretz Yisrael. We're talking here about Eretz Yisrael, as we'll see in a moment. That we don't mind, we are happy for them to remain here in Eretz Yisrael and continue to worship Avodah Zarah. That's exactly what the Torah says we're not allowed to do. Sheneemar lo tichrof lahem berith. Right, this is a pasuk in Devarim, Perek Zayin, Pasuk Beth. The Torah says as follows: Ki yevi'acha Adonai Elohecha el ha'aretz asher atavla shama lerishtah. When you come to the land that Hashem is giving you to inherit. ונשאל גויים רבים מפניך החיתי והגלגשי והאמורי והכנעני והפריזי והחיווי והיבוסי. And Hashem shall cause you to inherit and drive out many nations, namely these seven nations that we just read here. Shiv'a goyim, seven nations, רבים ועסומים ממכה, who are greater and larger than yourself, more powerful than yourself. When this is the case, when Hashem puts them into your hands, literally, when He grants you victory over them, kitam, you shall kill them. Aharen taharim otham, you shall destroy them. Lo tichroth lahem berith, velo tehonem. You shall not make any pact with them, any peace agreement with them, and allow them to remain in Eretz Yisrael. Velo tehonem. We'll get to the word lothachonim in a moment. So the context of the Torah is clear. It's talking about entering Eretz Yisrael in the time of Yoshua, etc. That when you enter the land and you come into contact with these people, and you will have to go to war against them, obviously, etc. When you've done so, you are to wipe them out and not leave any of them in Eretz Yisrael. Certainly not leave them by way of any kind of peace treaty, whereby you agree to their presence, their continued presence in Eretz Yisrael. That is not allowed. The Torah continues in Perek Zayin Pasuk Gimel in Devarim. It's relevant to read these next couple of psukim also for the purposes of understanding the context of what the Torah is saying. ולא תתחתן בם, and you shall not intermarry with them. ביתך לא תיתן לבנו, your daughter you shall not give to his son, to their sons, וביתו לא תיקח לבנך. Why not, says the Torah? כי יסיר את בנך מאחרי. Because this shall cause your son to turn away from me. It will cause your son to turn away from me. وَعَوَذُوا أَلَهِمْ أَحْرِيمْ to go and worship foreign gods. And then, وَحَرَى أَفْ أَدْنَي بَخَيْمْ and then Hashem shall be very angry with you. وَهِشْمِدَخَى مَهَيْرْ and he shall destroy you quickly, without delay. And therefore, what must you do? That's okay. Ki im ko ta'asu, rather what you should do is as follows. Ko ta'asu lahem, mizbehot lahem, titosu, you shall break down their altars, umasev otham tishaberu, and destroy their pillars that were used in Avodah Zarah, stone pillars. Wa asherehem, and their trees that were used in Avodah Zarah, tigadeon, you shall cut them down, ufasid lahem tisrafun ba'esh, and their idols you shall burn. They were made, things made of wood. Why is this? Why am I commanding you all this? Ki an kadosh ata, because you are a holy nation. Adonai Elohecha, before Hashem, your God. Becha behar Adonai Elohecha liyoth lo la'anus gula, and Hashem has chosen you to be a special, unique nation. Mikol ha'amim, from amongst all the nations. Asher al paneh adama. So that's enough for now. So the context and the message of the Torah is very clear. All these miswath mentioned here about destroying the altars and the temples of these nations that were at that time in Eretz Yisrael, the miswath about destroying them, wiping them out, not leaving them, allowing them to remain in Eretz Yisrael, which we'll discuss presently, the purpose of all this is clearly to not to have people with such false and pernicious views and practices and religions and beliefs to be in our land, so they will not influence us. That is the aim, that is the purpose of all these miswath. There can be no doubt about this, and it's very clear from what the Rambam is about to tell us. Alright, so we go back to the Rambam. So the Rambam said, from this pasuk, lo tichroth lahem berith, we learn that we are not allowed to cause non-Jews who worship Avodah Zarah to remain there as Israel. We are not allowed to make any kind of treaty with such people. Ela yahzaru mi'avodatha, rather, we have to coerce them. If you could convince them, I suppose, without coercing, that's also possible, but that's not likely to be the case. They have to cease worshipping and practicing these practices, or yeharvu, or they are to be put to death. Wa'asur l'rahim alayhem, and it is forbidden to have to take pity on them. Shene'emar v'lo t'honin. That's the meaning, the simple, sharp meaning of the word lo t'honin. Milashon hen, right? Like it says, we certainly know the usage in Hebrew, which appears in the Tanakh many, many times, that so-and-so was noseh hen be'enei poloni. Right? It means that so-and-so found favor in the eyes of so-and-so, and if that's the case, you're likely to have pity on this person and not deal with them harshly, etc. So the Torah is telling us, you must overcome your natural inclination to pity such people. They must be destroyed, as we just said, because they will inexorably, without fail, we cannot fail but to be so. If these people remain in Eretz Yisrael, they will cause you, the Jewish people, to lose your spiritual compass, and you will go astray. Lefichach, says the Rambam, therefore, im ra'a goy oved avodah zarah, oved or tove'a banahar. If a person, if a Jew, therefore, sees a non-Jew, a non-Jew who worships Avodah Zarah, Oved, in a situation where he's about to die, in other words, he's in a very precarious situation where his life is in great danger, or Tovea Banahar, or another example, he's drowning in the water, Lo Ya'alenu, you should not save him, in other words, you shouldn't dive in and pull him out. Rahu lekuach lamuth, lo yasilanu. You saw, if you see him in a situation where he's about to be killed, you should not say, one is not supposed to save him. Aval, however, la'abedo biyado, but to actually get up and actively attack him and kill him, to destroy him by your own, of your own volition, or the hafolavor, or to push him into a, like into a pit or something, where if you do that, he'll definitely die there. Wachayel sebaze, or something similar to that, asur, that is asur. Why? Because he is not at war with us. From this, of course, you understand that if he is at war with you, no, this is not, I'm not being facetious, I'm being 100% serious. The Rambam deliberately wrote it exactly this way for this specific and precise reason. To tell you, you know, in a classic Rambam way, without even spending any words on it, he's teaching you a whole halakha by writing in this way. He says, it's a sort to do this, to go out and initiate such a thing and kill such a person, unless he's at war with you. And any person who understands the meaning of those words will infer correctly that if he is in a state of, this person is in a state of war with you, for example, his nation is in a state of war with the Jewish people, then you are allowed to do such a thing. This halakha, the Rambam here is working into his own words without actually spelling it out, is a well-known halakha which appears originally for the first time is mentioned in the Mechilta in Parashat Bo in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, where it says Hatov shebagoyim harog b'sha'af milhama, that the best of non-Jews should be put to death in a time of war. In other words, if you're in a situation of war, if you want a classic example, I don't know, let's say a Jewish soldier is fighting in the Second World War in Normandy, right, in the invasion of Europe, and he's fighting these German soldiers. In a war situation, and not necessarily only on the battlefield, even in a with what's called today, what the media likes to refer to usually as innocent civilians, like all the innocent civilians in Dresden, for example, or Berlin, or what have you, or Nagasaki, those kinds of people, you're not supposed to trust them either, because their sentiments are clear. They're obviously not on your side, they're on the side of their own people. So even if you turn your back for a moment, they may, I don't know what they might do, right? In other words, you can't trust such a person. And this, of course, happens all the time when armies end up fighting street to street in an urban situation, urban warfare, as opposed to an open battlefield. And if there are civilians somewhere caught in the middle, what Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai is saying, Hatov shebagoyim harog b'sha'af milhama, in that kind of situation, don't trust anyone who belongs to the other side, whether he's armed or not, whether he's a soldier or not. Because in a war, you must assume that if he belongs to the other side, that he's a danger to you or to your buddies, the guy next door, the guy in the next foxhole, or the guy in the next jeep, whatever. You can't trust him for one moment. Any normal person knows this is a fact. This is how you must wage war. Not that war is a wonderful and pleasant experience, but it's a fact. It's something that exists in the real world, and if you wish to survive, you better be good at it. That's one of the central lessons of human history. If you wish to survive, be good at making war. And the Rambam, no less a person, the Rambam made this point. And in fact, it's probably worthwhile that I quote this Rambam. Again, so no one should imagine I just made that up. So I'll read it to you.
It's not only in Eretz Israel.
Well, the initial thrust of the Torah is clearly speaking about Eretz Israel. This halakha is regarding saving the life of a person who's known to be someone who worships Avodah Zarah, is understood to apply anywhere. But in the first place, the Torah is definitely referring to Eretz Yisrael. There's a famous Igeret letter written by the Rambam to Chachmei Marseille, to the wise men of Marseille from the south of France. One of the main topics of this letter that he wrote to them is about astrology. I don't know about the personal beliefs of every person in this room regarding astrology, and I know there still are many people in the world who believe in astrology, and I'm not interested in getting any arguments about whether it's true or not true. I can just tell you state for a fact that the Rambam thinks it's definitely not true. The Rambam writes consistently in many places in his writings that astrology is one big lie. Right? For all kinds of reasons. But the connection to what we're discussing now is as follows, because the Rambam says in his letter to Chachmei Marseille, you have to keep in mind when the Rambam wrote this in the 1100s, many people, in fact not many, most people, the vast majority of people in the world, educated, no matter how educated or intelligent they may have been, believed in astrology. This was commonplace, standard wisdom and practice throughout the world, everywhere, from China to France, it didn't matter where. Everyone believed in astrology. For a person to get up and say, as the Rambam does here, that this is all what's called in Yiddish narishkeit, in other words, it's all, or another good Yiddish term, bubemaisis, it's all sipurei savta, there's nothing to it, it's just an opium for the masses, there's nothing to it whatsoever. This was a very big chidush, a very, very big, a very, very radical statement to make. And there were many people who weren't very happy with what the Rambam had to say about this. This includes many Rabbanim, many Chachamim, etc. The Rambam says, and this is certainly true, no matter what one thinks about astrology, the Rambam does say something which is definitely a fact. He says, "V'zohi she'avada malchufenu v'hariva beth mikdashenu." It is because of this so-called wisdom or science of astrology, says the Rambam, is for this reason that we lost our malchut, in other words, our independence and our sovereignty in our own land. V'hariva beth mikdashenu, and for this reason that the beth mikdash was destroyed. V'hericha galuthenu, and for this reason our galuth has been so long. V'higi'athnu al halom, and we've come down to the present situation. Why? Sha'avothenu hatu'u enam, our forefathers were no longer here, they sinned. Lefishem asa'u sefarim rabim be'ele hadavarim. They found that there were in the world then, as there are today, many books that deal with matters of astrology and presented as a science and a very deep and profound wisdom. Lefishem asa'u sefarim rabim be'ele hadavarim shel divrei ahuzim bekochavim, based on the writings of all these astrologers. Shel divarim elu hem ikar avodah zarah, and as Rambam says, these and all these things to do with astrology and the planets, etc. These are the foundation, the source, and the starting point of all avodah zarah. All avodah zarah began with these kinds of things. Kamo shebi'anu b'ilchot avodah zarah, as I have written, explained in ilchot avodah zarah. And our forefathers, reading these books, ta'u wanahu ahrahem, they were mistakenly convinced to follow these books and believe them. With the mul shehem chokhmot mefuaroth, and they imagined these to be great, profound wisdom and science. Wayesh bahem to'alith gadolah, that these things were very, very helpful, that one would gain great benefit by studying these things. And the Rambam adds here, wala nith asiqu b'lemidat milhama, rather than studying warfare, the waging of war, wala b'chibush arasoth, how to conquer other countries, ela dimu she'othana dvarim yu'ir lahem, because they believe that the stars will help them, and knowing what the stars etc. had to tell you would be more than enough to win the day. So the Rambam is making, this is a very powerful point, which I think anyone, even people who disagree with the Rambam's position on astrology, would have to accept, that when people mistakenly take this to be the be-all and end-all of our endeavors, of our ishtadlut ba'olam hazeh, that if you focus and you concentrate on something like astrology and you look at the stars and you predict that this will be like, things will be like this or like that, and on that basis you make plans or you do something or refrain from doing something, if this is how you run your affairs, whether you're an individual or a nation, you will come to grief. In other words, if you don't deal with practical, down-to-earth things, like the Rambam says here, belimidatha milhama, the knowledge of waging war, etc., then you will run into, at some point, you will run into great trouble. In other words, believing in such ideas, if it distracts you, whether you believe it to be true or not, is another issue. But if it distracts you from taking care of essential, basic, real world things that need to be taken care of, then it's clearly a very great disaster. Okay, the Rambam continues. That was a small digression, but a worthwhile one, I hope. So the Rambam says in Halakha Beth now. That which we just said about not saving a non-Jew who's known to worship Avodah Zarah, or actually, even if we don't know for a fact, but if one can assume that's the fact. In other words, as I said earlier, the Ramban explains in Masechet Makot Daf Tet that the assumption is that a non-Jew, certainly was true in those days, and it's also true today in many parts of the world, for example, India. I don't forget, the Indians are a rather populous group of people. It's about, well, it depends whom you believe, anywhere between 1.2 and 1.6 billion Indians in the world. So, the CIA claims that there's about 600 million Indians that are just not listed anywhere in official records. So, the real number is several hundred million greater than the official figures. So, at any rate, for a place like India, but not just India, Avodah Zarah doesn't just exist. It's rampant. It's rife. It's in every street corner, mamash, and every single person believes in it. Every single one. But the truth is, it's not just India. It's all over the world, and it's also very possible to make the claim that the same status as the Torah gives to those who worship Avodah Zarah, one can make the case that the same status should also be given to those who are declared atheists. Atheism is not an acceptable option. The Netziv Mevolozhin writes, I'm not going to go into it now, but the Netziv Mevolozhin writes explicitly that a person who believes or disbelieves in the existence of a God and the Creator altogether is worse than Avodah Zarah. So there's no great dispensation for being an avowed atheist. At any rate, these are all issues that are related to what we're discussing, but not the issue itself. So let's go back to the issue itself. The Rambam says that what we just said in Halakha Aleph applies to a non-Jew. However, Jews who are Musarim, or Minim, or Apikorosim, such people, which the Rambam defines these categories elsewhere, and I'll define them again in a moment, these people are dealt with more harshly than such a non-Jew. Miswa labradam bayad. It is a miswa to destroy them deliberately. In other words, by our own actions, direct action. Ulo horidan ad be'er shachat, and to bring about their destruction. Mipanei shehem meserim liYisrael, because these people cause the Jewish people great distress. For instance, a moser is a person who gives information or property, or even physically hands over a Jew to non-Jewish authorities or evil people, the enemies of the Jewish people, etc. Umesirin et ha'am me'acharei Hashem, and minim an apikorosim, because of their beliefs and their practices, like an apikoros. What's an apikoros? An apikoros, as the Rambam writes in Yichot Teshuvah Perek Gimel, is a person who, the essential definition, is someone who denies nevuah altogether. He says there's no such thing as nevuah. In other words, whether there's a God or not, I don't know. It doesn't really interest me. But I know that he can't speak to human beings, or he doesn't bother to. Or I don't believe he does. And that claim, of course, even if the person says, well, I believe there's a creator, because there has to be, logically, that claim that there's no such thing as nevuah is a denial of the Torah, by definition. Like, there can't be a Torah. So the Torah can only be a very interesting document written by a very talented Jew called, you know, Moshe, who came from Mitzrayim or something, but not anything from Hashem. Such people who are Jews, but cause the Jewish people great distress, great harm, either physical or spiritual harm, are to be destroyed l'chatchila. In other words, not just if they happen to be in that kind of situation, you're not allowed to save them. You're allowed to actually initiate such a thing to bring about their destruction. Such as, says the Rambam, ke Yeshua no Hanosri, such as Yeshu, the famous Jesus, right? Hanosri, with Talmidho and his students. With Sadok, Uvaithos, with Talmidehem, and these other leaders of other sects that broke away from the Jewish people and brought about great distress. About all these people, the Rambam adds the Pasuk from Mishle, Shem Rasha'im Yirkav. May the name of the wicked rot. That's what I was trying to explain. That's what I was explaining before to Moshe, no? עכשיו אתה מבין למה כל זה צנזר, no? אתה לא יכול לכתוב כאלה דברים, להדפיס את זה בבית הדפוס שמעבר לכביש יושב לך האפיפיור. זה לא בדיוק עובד. נכון? If people did print such things 500 years ago, they built a little bonfire and they put you in the middle with your books and they burnt you. So it wasn't something you could really do. So when it came to using the word goy in this first edition of the Rambam that Aaron has in his hands, which is from the year Resh Mem, 1480, they used the word goy. They did have a problem with the word goy. Only later did the Christian censors decide they did have a problem with that word and they changed it all to something else. But any direct reference to Christianity or the founder of Christianity or anything at all of that nature, that was expunged completely. Right, and that's why you won't find it there. Therefore, says the Rambam in Halacha Gimel, or in some books Halacha Beth, Mikan Ata Lamed, and from all this, therefore, you will necessarily and obviously understand, you will learn, She'asur l'rapot avde avodah zara afilu b'sachar. It is not permitted to heal, in other words, to help them medically, to help such people, even if you're being paid to do so, if you're a doctor, obviously, in other words. On the other hand if you are scared of them, in other words, if you refuse, you're afraid of what they might do to you, or you're worried about it causing bad blood, in other words, bad relations between the Jews and the non-Jews, shall we say, in your town. You don't think you can risk this right now. Merape b'sachar, you're allowed to act as their doctor b'sachar if you're being paid to do so. Aval b'chinam asur, but not for free. No one can really come to you and claim that you have to treat him for free. So as I say, well, I just don't treat people, I don't pay, which is not a reasonable thing to say. So that's what the Rambam says about treating such people, helping such people, in other words, saving their lives medically, is the exact opposite of what we just said before. Ger Toshav, however, a person who is defined as a Ger Toshav, a foreign resident, which is, as we said earlier, a person who we know lives according to the Sheva Misot Ninoach, and was came before a Beth Din and was recognized as such a person, officially given such a status. And we're talking here about in Eretz Yisrael, an ideal time when the Jewish state is run according to Torah principles. If you're talking about a Ger Toshav, Ho'il Watab Suela Hayotho, seeing that we are commanded to give tzedakah, to give charity to such a person, if he has no money, for example, a Ger Toshav, we're required to give him charity, we're required to help him out. If he all of a sudden hits hard times and he has no money, no food, we have to help him out as we do with a Jew. Merapim otho b'chinam. Therefore, you're also allowed to heal him, to treat him medically for free. Right, halacha dalet, or halacha gimel in some books. Here we have another different halacha altogether, a different area of affairs, which is also based on the pasuk lotachonim. All right, it says en mochrin lahem batim wasadot beretz Yisrael. We are not allowed to sell houses or fields, in other words, land, to such people, in other words, to Avodah Avodah Zarah, to non-Jews, and the assumption is that any non-Jew you don't know is such a person, Be'eretz Yisrael. So there's a general Isur to sell land in Eretz Yisrael to a non-Jew. Uve Surya, Mukhrim Lahem Batim, Avarot Sadoth. Surya is an area to the northeast of Eretz Yisrael, which is considered somewhere, shall we say, between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz, on a sliding scale. You have Eretz Yisrael, Surya, and the rest of Chutz La'aretz. So Surya is, for some purposes, considered like Eretz Yisrael, for other purposes, not. When it comes to this Isur, you're allowed to sell them a house to live in, avalos sadot, not a field. Why not? Because a field is, if a person in those days, in that kind of society, an agricultural society, if a person has land, he can grow things on that land, then he's able to sustain himself, and he can live there permanently, forever, in fact. In other words, you're allowing them to set themselves up, you're allowing them to settle the land. If you give a person a home, but he can't grow his own food, then his existence there in such a place is much more precarious. So we're more mekel than Eretz Yisrael Mamash, but we still don't help them settle in this area called Surya. Umaskirim lahem batim Eretz Yisrael. We are allowed to rent a house to such people in Eretz Yisrael. In other words, they're not supposed to be here, but if they are in Eretz Yisrael, we're talking therefore about a situation, of course, where we're not really in control, or Torah Jews are not in control, and therefore there are such people in Eretz Yisrael. You are allowed to rent a premises to such a person, or vilval shelo ya'asem shechuna, as long as you don't create a neighborhood of such people. In other words, v'en shechuna pechuta mishlosha. In other words, three houses together of these kinds of non-Jews over there with Azara, you know, it's what's called a shechuna, a neighborhood of people who really shouldn't be there in the first place, and that you're not allowed to do, not even rent out such a house if it's going to result in that reality. When maskirim lahem sadot, but we're not allowed to rent out land, fields to such people. Uva Surya maskirim lahem sadot. In Surya we're allowed to rent out such fields. So in Eretz Yisrael, you're not allowed to sell homes or land at all, but you are allowed to rent out a home, a house, but not a field. And in Surya, it's one dargah less, it's one level less stringent, so you're allowed to sell the homes and rent out land. Umipene ma yihmiru basadeh, and why is a field, is land considered more chamur, more serious, more of a problem than a house? Mipnei sheyesh ba shetayim mafki'a min ha'ma'asroth v'noten lahem hanaya b'karka. A, there are two elements which exist in selling or renting land to a non-Jew in Eretz Yisrael, which is not true in the case of a house. One, that land, the produce from that land will be produced, but no ma'asroth will be taken from it. Right? The non-Jew is not even required to take ma'asroth. And obviously he won't do so. But this is considered, it's as if you're removing this piece of land from the generality of Eretz Yisrael, from which teruoth and ma'asroth are taken. And the second of all, v'nofen lahem hanaya b'karka. And second of all, you're giving them, you're allowing them permanence, hanaya, in other words, permanence to become fixed and settled in the land. If you sell them land, etc., they'll be their settlement, their existence here will become permanent, and that's something which we do not, which we are not supposed to do, for the reasons we explained before. That the Torah is knows the way of the world. When you have such people living next door to you, and you get to know them, and you end up intermarrying, etc., there has to be negative influences on the Jewish people from the coming from these outside influences, these foreign influences. And because the Torah knows that when you are the only nation that has an ideal called monotheism and Isur Avodah Zarah and everything the Torah stands for, you're such a nation, awash in a sea of humanity that holds other views. In fact, views that are the complete opposite of such an ideal. Then there has to be all manner of measures have to be taken in order to protect you from these influences. And that is the essential that is the essential purpose of the sur, the misvat lo ta'aseh lo tahonem, which Chazal interpreted to mean not just to not have pity on them, but don't do anything that is to their benefit in a meaningful way, including giving them land to sustain themselves with, etc. All right, today we'll stop here, and next time we'll continue our discussion with the Chaim.